Blog Talk Radio.
It's too hard to get over, slow to get under.
Let my people go.
I make it feel so good, you don't need to wonder.
Let my people go.
I take away the storm clouds, the rain, the thunder.
Let my people go.
Somebody say it.
Let my people go.
Somebody say it.
Let my people go.
For centuries, the body chemistry, men's wounds, heals injuries. My ministry leaves the industry in a tailspin. So I push the envelope like U.S. mailmen. We need a leader who is not mischievous, devious from Satan's lips. Leaders won't retract the fact to act facetious. In fact, the rat to pack respect to teach us, reach us, easily leave him speechless. Read from the palm of the non-believers. Tell them they wondering how they become underachievers. One of the best, the perennial keynote speaker. Now I got it, you want it, come get it. I want it, and I will show you a way to let my people go today.
Try to get over, slow to get under. Let my people go.
I make it feel so good, you don't need to wonder.
Let my people go.
I take away the storm clouds. They trying to steal lives through the people, huh? Knowing it's hard times for the people, huh? I knock your ass unconscious, put it up on YouTube, and film the sequel so it's free for the people, huh? Go ahead and download it, I'ma teach you how. She is a prophet, a pastor, a preacher with undisputable logic for blasting through your speaker now. I'm trying to learn your monk ass, I'm trying to reach you now. And still you're like, who's this dude? Return to fix, shake the game like Rubik's Cube. Chickies brolic now, ruthless too. Spit the gospel on wax, what he chooses to do. Damn, open your eyes, man, you've been bamboozled by the usual plan. Hit up the middle like Sam Musual. If y'all are telling me today's music is suitable and appealing, and I'm telling you the feelings are not mutual.
So how to get over, you know to get under. Let my people go.
About that because it's definitely an issue in our community, and
I work in education, so I see everything that sort of happens because of what goes on in families. School is the one place that you always see the results of what happens within families. Without even knowing the details, we can tell if something's going on that's not supporting the child. We can tell if the child is happy, if they feel secure, or if they are sort of floundering out in the world. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some strategies that parents can use. And people who read the book say it's really not for just single parents or single mothers. It's for all parents. And I am always pleased to hear that.
It is, it is. I read it halfway through it so far, and I can tell you that it's definitely for everyone. All parents should be reading it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So if you have any specific questions to ask, that I certainly welcome it. I'll take a breath so you can jump in, and I will just start talking a little bit about it if that's fine with you.
Oh, definitely. That's good. Be ready.
Okay. Well, first I'm going to let you know how I came about writing the book. It was really about 10 or 12 years ago, and I was working in the school system in New York City, and everything that we did was about intervention, and I see that you were from Brooklyn, so you know what I'm talking about. And what we noticed in the school system that it was that children were struggling, and I had become a single mother myself, and I was working, and I was, you know, doing a lot of projects at work. I was trying to do the best by my daughter, and I realized that this is effort. There are two ways to look at expending energy. It's either struggle or it's effort. So I was putting a lot of effort into it, which meant I was tired at the end of the day. I had a lot of challenges that I faced, but I was satisfied. I was happy. I wasn't stressed. But what I was seeing is that a lot of people were in the same situation I was in, and they were very stressed, and they were struggling. And that's what caused me to write the book. It's so silent out there, so I will just keep going. Well, what I looked at were the areas that seemed to cause the most challenges. Children need structure. They need to know that parents are happy. They need routine. And sometimes that can be hard to come by. And it's very, very hard to come by if our personal lives as adults aren't really together. And by together, I don't mean that we have everything worked out or that we can solve every problem well, but it really is about having a plan for how we live our lives. Because if we don't have a plan, we're basically just winging it. And when we are just doing whatever pops into our minds, we can end up anywhere. And with a plan, we are headed in a particular direction. So as part of my journey, I think it really is, because I think these kinds of things are basically on my heart. I've always been interested in community, always been interested in family and problem solving and creating a better way. I'm a growth person. And I said, well, who am I to write this book? How can I, you know, tell anybody anything? And that really is the backstory, because I was raised by a single mother, but my mother and two of her sisters, back when I was a little child, bought a four-family house in Brooklyn. They bought it together. My mother had a child at the time, but the others didn't. But what that did was it set up sort of a communal environment. And when they had children later in, you know, different circumstances, actually made all of us grow up in the same environment, it created a communal system that took a lot of the stress off the family. So rather than having one single mom, I had three mothers, which is a lot different because there are different people sharing the cooking, solving the problems, creating a household that was very structured. And what I realized is that I was putting forth effort and having a better experience than many of my peers because I had learned so much from all these women. I come from a family of people who were farmers before they moved to New York. So they could cook, they could sew, they knew how to raise children, they knew how to make, you know, stretch money, they knew how to do all those things. And since I came up getting their knowledge, then those were things that I was pretty comfortable with as well. So I said, well, I'm going to take the things that I know that are making my life work and put them in this little guide, because I could see that if I had all this information and I still had challenges, then those who didn't and who were younger and who had fewer resources would definitely need some strategies. Make sense? So I set it up as a guide. Only it's a short guide as well. It's only 42 pages, because the last thing a busy person who needs resources needs is a very thick book where they're going to have to stress about when to finish it. So I made it very short, and I looked at four areas that I thought were key: personal life, setting priorities like food, bills, decision making, handling education, and then some general tips. And that I figured would be a good platform for starting to see how you can parent, whether you have one kid, two kids, three kids, or more, but still find a way to keep your sanity. Because what I see, and I still see, are lots of mothers in particular who are very, very stressed, very, very tired, at their wit's end. I see them at school. I see them in the community. And quite often they don't really know where to get, you know, the ideas they need. And in our community, I think so much of it has to do with a system that did not always, and I think we still don't value family as much as we need to. We don't necessarily have structures in place where we see where our relationships are a big part of raising our children. And we can't really do it alone. When we become single parents or single mothers, we have to really figure out, how do we make this work in a society that is so complicated? First area that I looked at was personal life. And why did I choose personal life? Because I think that is one of the biggest areas that young women feel compromised in. You have a child now, or you have two children, and it's all about them. But everybody needs to nurture his or herself. And especially if you were young. And I actually work in a school that has pregnant and parenting teens. And I can see how the teens become almost childlike themselves when they get the babies, because now it's about the babies, but then they still need so much themselves, and it becomes a stress for them. So your personal life is of key importance, but once you have children, you also have the responsibility of keeping your children safe. So the question I pose is, can a single mom or a single dad have a personal life? And I say, absolutely, you must have one, but you must set up your life in such a way that your children are safe, and you create your space in such a way that as you're having your personal life, it's not infringing on your relationship with the child or allowing children to see too much too early and things of that nature. So I that's one of my favorite sections, and people who read it will often say, oh, I loved it, I needed to hear that, and I love the tips that you gave. And so I think that really does make a lot of women feel better about choosing to focus on themselves as well as their children, because in order to be happy, we have to nurture ourselves. After personal life, I looked at setting priorities. This is a biggie, because quite often if we're single parent, that means we have one income, not two, or we are getting assistance, so we have limited resources. And, okay, how do we make this work? Setting priorities is all about figuring out what has to come first. What has to come first is always security. Security in terms of, we must have a place to live. If at all possible, we must pay our rent or pay our mortgage. We must make decisions that we're not giving anybody any extra money and quite often, I think what happens is we get a little frustrated if money's short all the time and say, oh, forget about it. I'm going to buy this, you know, whatever it is that I might really, really want, even if I don't have all the cash that I need. And in my guide, I say, just fight that feeling, because if you're having trouble paying the bill this month, if you're short, you're definitely going to have more trouble paying it next month, because the money doesn't just magically appear because we're frustrated. So I talk a little bit about paying bills, not shopping at the corner store all the time because they're going to pay charge you more, and just about making decisions in your daily life that will keep you afloat. That, I think, is important because we do have a lot of young parents. I was fortunate enough to have had quite a bit of experience at the time that I became a single mom. But there are many young women who are, you know, 18, 19, sometimes with 2-3 children. And I think that's key, that we learn how to prioritize in ways that keep us happy. Another factor that I think comes into play in our community, and I'm a big post-traumatic slavery person because I think that there's a lot of healing that we still have to do in our community. But quite often we are, we look for instant gratification. And a big part of making our lives work as parents is putting things off. We have to wait in order to get what we really need. Not what we want at the moment to feel a little better, but we wait so that we get what we really, really do want. And that's generally peace of mind, security, knowing that your children have what they need, knowing that we can fix our car if it breaks down, you know, those kinds of things. So that's my setting priorities section. After that, I went into education, and education can drive absolutely anybody crazy, myself included, and I'm actually in education.
Right, I'm back. Still having technical difficulty.
Okay. All right. So I was talking about the setting priorities, and then I moved on to education.
Yeah.
And education should be at the top of everybody's list, because even if your children are small, they will eventually go to school. And once they go to school, there will be issues. I had no idea that something so that we all take for granted, that our children will go to school, can be such a stressor in our lives. So I devoted quite a bit of time to education so that as you're going through the process with your children, you figure out the best approach for getting them what they need. Sometimes we can't pick the schools that our children are in. Sometimes they're bused across the city. Sometimes they go to a local school that you feel isn't adequate. So we don't have control usually over the situations that we find ourselves in. But what we have to do is make sure that our children are sort of learning ready. I teach now. I've worked for school districts. I've written educational grants for intervention. But right now I'm a high school teacher. And I'm very, very happy in that role because I like to give students as much as I can give. But quite often, that's not the situation that parents find. Sometimes the teacher isn't as supportive as he or she should be, or sometimes you really don't like the school. So I look at the kinds of things that can help parents stay on top of it. One is to make sure that your child has what they need when they go to school. And basically, that is to be adequately nourished so that they stay awake and that they get enough sleep. I think if we just started with those two things, it would make a huge difference with small children. I talk to friends often because in the old days, and I'm not that old, but in the old days, parents weren't afraid to set the kinds of limits that kept children healthy and secure. Now I find lots of parents want their children to be happy, if that means sometimes staying up till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. They won't go to bed, the parent will say, I can't get them to go to bed. And I'm like, of course you can get them to go to bed. It may take you a few weeks to get them in that habit, but parents create habits and children fall into those habits. And I've seen so many young students who fall asleep just because they go to bed late. And that's a horrible start in life, because if you're sleepy, you can't learn. When you can't learn, it starts the ball rolling for all kinds of problems that we really don't want to deal with. We have too many students already who are labeled with, you know, special needs, and sometimes there really are special needs. And I was a special programs teacher for a number of years, and there are some valuable services there. But every child who's there doesn't need to be, and then there are some students who are not there who need to be. But as parents, what we can do is make sure that they are well rested, that they don't have lots of sugar and sweet drinks in the morning, that they have really basic healthy food, which is often less expensive than the things that they like. And that makes a huge difference. I even tell my students when they're about to test, don't eat any carbs. Don't eat carbs. Eat something that's going to be very nutritious and heavy, because if you have a donut or you have cookies, you're going to fall asleep. Those simple things will help students and their parents have an easier time than they're having. Quite often, also, we have to look at what's important in terms of investing in education. We all know that people come with different skills. They come with different personalities. So we have to know our children to the extent that we give them the kinds of experiences they need, as opposed to what we think is like a stereotypical great kid. For instance, I have students now who are about 18 years old, some 19, some are 20, should have graduated years ago, and yet they have no idea what they want to do with their lives. And what's very sad about it is that lots of them are very talented, but what didn't happen was nobody saw what their talents were, because there was so much focus on the straight academics, just the getting the A in this and the A in that and try to get a B and try to get this, whereas that student might have been a major artist or a talented chef or great with their hands and they could be a graphic designer. Just it's so much is missed when we don't see our whole child as opposed to sort of getting sucked into the system. So education, I think, is key, because we need it to nourish our whole child. In order for it to be a positive experience for you and for your child, it's about knowing what they need and giving them that, and not being sort of seduced into creating a typical experience that really isn't working, because the education system has so many problems. Lastly, in the guide, I talk about some tips that I think parents should be mindful of. And to summarize a couple, one is to be part of an extended family, because parenting is a journey. It takes a long time. It's a lot of work. It's constantly changing, and we must have community. Children need it, and I read someplace years ago that children who were part of an extended family or extended network felt more secure than those who weren't. And the reason was that if they had a sense that if something happened to their parents, they would not be alone in the world. And I thought that was very important, because our culture and our society has changed that we don't have communal living the way it happened, 40, 50 years ago. And we don't have communities where people grow up and stay where they are. They move all across the globe or across the United States, and you find the place, you find yourself wherever you are. But wherever you are, for your own peace of mind and for your children's health, it's important to find a network of people who are supports for you. Another tip I include is let your kids be kids, because they aren't little adults and they don't need to worry about what's going on with your personal life or what's going on with the money. They really can't do anything about it, so it's not that I'm saying shield children, but there's no need to put more on their plates than they can handle. I see the result of children being stressed out and nervous over things that really aren't, they aren't prepared to deal with. I have another tip about staying organized, because I think our environments can just take our energy if we have too much in them, and we are a consumer-driven society, way too consumer-driven, and we will pick things up just because it's on sale or because it's $2, and before we know it, we have, you know, 3,000 things in our house, and we only need, you know, 500 things in the house. So I talk about, you know, not bringing in extra things, and if the things you do have, organize them so that you see these things and it's not draining your energy, because clutter will indeed drain your energy. And there are a few other tips that I include about buying on sale, not caring what other people think. We are too media driven, so I get very upset when I have students who have, you know, $200 sneakers on. And I'm like, why on earth are you paying so much for your sneakers? But I really love them and they're so popular and I stood online. And I say, well, somebody bought these for you, and if it was me, I never would buy them. And I say that because there are other things they could have had that they would appreciate just as much. It could be lessons. So that student who loves music could be taking music lessons instead of having the $200 sneakers. Or they could be having a science camp or developing some talent within that would take him or her way further than those sneakers would ever take them. So basically it's about looking at parenting from a different perspective, sort of a holistic perspective, because if we can really nurture children in a way that makes them feel secure, in a way that prepares them to meet the goals that they set for themselves, as well as sort of have them fulfill the visions that we have for them, then we will have a totally different community in the next generation. And I think if we don't look at these things, then we will have a lot of chaos, because right now the society is very askew in the way it makes decisions, what it puts forth as what's important, and we're sort of following that mode, but I don't think there is a mode, really. It's just a little chaos. So I think we can sort of reel it in and get it tight and basically get it right. Not that I have all the answers, but they are strategies. Thank you. Are there any questions? Arlene, are you listening? Okay. Arlene, are you listening? Okay, well, I'm not sure if Arlene is there or not, but for support,
yes, I'm here.
Okay. I wanted to say a bit more about some of the venues other than the book. I have a blog that I've started for just people in general, which is all about stress relieving, staying grounded in a frantic world, and that is all about day-to-day strategies for making life easier, and that's beyond parenting, but just for keeping ourselves grounded. That could be found at angelabelcherepps.blogspot.com, and that's all one word. Well, the three names together, Angela Belcher Epps, www.blogspot.com. And also, I wrote grants for several years, and that has quite a bit to do with how I got into intervention, because when you look at the research to write grants, what you find is that the statistics that we see are nothing compared to what we don't see. And that spearheaded a lot of the projects that I'm involved with. I did intervention in the Fort Greene section of New York, Bed-Stuy section of New York, and those are some of the hardest hit areas when it comes to financial and employment issues. So we started some magnet schools back in the 90s, and I started to see, and this is why I write, is that there are always strategies for addressing issues. There's always some way to look at a problem and see its root cause and put some effort in a particular direction. I have a grant writing guide that I think is very helpful to organizations that are trying to do community-based work. It's available on my website, and it's called Grant Writing. Let's see, what is it? Actually, it's the Handbook for Grant Writing, Easy-to-Follow Guide for Winning Proposals. And that is sort of like the parenting guide in that I wrote it for the layperson. I wrote it so that a person who had never written a grant could actually follow the steps and come up with a proposal. I was a contractual grant writer for a number of years, and we won, you know, millions and millions of dollars. But what I found quickly was that the people who needed it the most were unable to hire grant writers. So I wrote the book so that those community organizations, church-based organizations, anybody who's grassroots who wants to access some of those federal dollars could actually follow a guide and get it right with some minor editing. Again, that is the handbook. Hello?
Right. So now you have the handbook for grant writing, and you also have the grant writing toolkit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the toolkit is different from the grant writing handbook in that it's the toolkit is are really just templates. So I have the information that you would need to gather, and you can fill it in the blanks. I lead you step by step in that toolkit to gather information that's needed to write the grant.
Right. I'm trying to think. When you're writing the grant, now, of course, there's corporations on which that you can send these grants to in order to see if they have any funds available for certain projects.
Right.
So basically you would just have to tweak those particular forms in order to fit your particular situation.
Absolutely.
But just at the templates, right?
Yes, and so I got the templates. I set them up to be generic because if, let's say you are a youth intervention agency. There are certain activities that you will be conducting within your environment under your project. The template allows you to collect all the information that you will need to respond to any proposal. That way, if something comes along and it's for technology, it's a technology grant, you can list pieces from your toolkit to respond to the questions in the technology grant. Or if it's a grant for that you can get staff, you will already have your information mapped out in your toolkit where you can list it. You'll have objectives related to staff. And that way you have a comprehensive document that becomes sort of the foundation for any funding sources that are out there.
Okay. Now, you also do workshops and raise money for nonprofit organizations. How do all of that fit in?
Well, I don't do as much of that as I used to. I was actively a grant writer all the time. What I do now, I can do the workshops because I want to build other people's capacity to write their own grants. What happened, and I saw this firsthand, was when I was working as a grant consultant, people would hire me, and it's a lot of work. Grant writing is a very tedious, it's very, very hard work. So we don't come cheap, grant writers, basically. And what I would see would be organization after organization hiring the grant writers, but they would use so much of their budget for grant writers that it wasn't feasible for them to sustain it. What every foundation and funding source is looking for in projects is sustainability, meaning they want to see that when they give money, the money is used for program. And the way you do that is by building your own host of grant writers in-house. So I train organizations, grant writers, and I did. I trained not long ago. I trained a group within a church, a rural church community, and they were able to raise $750,000 for their youth center because I trained a whole team who could do what they could hire one grant writer to do. But, of course, if it's your team, you don't have to pay them. You have the expertise in-house. And I think that's what we need as a community would be people who can do the things that other people will charge them for.
All right, so putting together a nonprofit organization would be the first thing to do.
Yes.
Of course, what would be the easiest method in order to do so? Would you go to the Secretary of State? Incorporated organization? Would you just get online? What would be the easiest way to do so?
Well, to qualify for federal grants and just foundation money, you have to be a 501c3 organization, which means you're a tax-exempt organization that can receive money from donors. Without that, the person who gives you the money or the organization who gives you the money can't claim it as a tax write-off. That's why without that 501c3, you can't get money. So that's the first step is you can go online and find the documents for that, but usually you have to get an accountant or legal counsel involved in that because it is a legally binding agreement, which requires you to have a board of directors, an operating structure, and, you know, all the background information that you would have for any business.
All right. Now, let me say this because a lot of Moors in this particular arena, they don't deal with 501c3s. However, that's within their own organization, such as the Moorish Science Temple of America, or Moorish Holy Temple of Science, or part of the Moorish Divine National Movement. However, individually, brothers and sisters, you may and can have a 501c3. As Sister Angela just stated, in which that you can utilize in order to do, to get funding for your grants, through your grants, so just pay attention to what she's saying because this is something in which that can help economically in the community, and that's why we're having this show tonight. Let's get into Abyssinia and the literature in the African diaspora.
Excuse me, I didn't hear.
The Abyssinian literature in the African diaspora.
Oh, yes. That's fiction. So that is a collection of stories and poems and just general literature from North Carolina. It's a tribute to African-American writers of African descent. And it came out last year, and I have two stories there that are actually the two opening chapters of a novella that will be coming out in the fall. And it features some of the best African-American writers, I think, that are out there now. I don't consider myself among them.
All right. And these are short stories, and you say they're fiction.
Yeah, mine are fiction.
Right, right. So there's also nonfiction then.
Yes, there are some essays in the book as well as some interviews. Yes.
Okay.
And it's a very good read. That's available from NC State University. Their African American Studies program.
Right.
Issued that.
Okay. Well, let's get into also the science of self-healing and natural healers. I know that you're definitely a practitioner of those particular arts and sciences. About how long have you been doing so, and what have you received any benefits from as far as the practice?
Oh, my. I wasn't prepared to talk about all that. But, yes, I'm very much a naturalist. I think we've gotten way too technical in healing. I think that the body has basically what it needs in order to be healthy, and we have to figure out and listen to our bodies. So I am very much into eating to live, and I'm a big, I guess, proponent of two things. One is eating for blood type, because there was a book that came out, I guess, about 10 years ago that talked about how the regions that we originated impacted our blood.
Diamanto, right.
Yeah, so you,
mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that philosophy as well?
Oh, yes. How to eat right for the four basic blood types. How
yes.
old blood type is about 2,500 to 300,000 years old. How A blood type is about 20,000 years old. And how B blood type is about 13,000 years old. And AB blood type is about 2,000 years old. And based on that scenario, based on the way in which that the antigens within the blood are coagulated, it should be based on a particular diet. And there's foods in which that... I guess you can say is eating in order to help keep one's body in a proper acidic and
right.
alkaline ratio.
Right, and I
mm-hmm.
find that makes such a difference with me. When I started, sinus issues fell away, and I found that if I eat too much meat and so forth, I just start to have general problems. Sugar is a poison for me. I cannot eat sugar. If I do, I have congestion. My heart palpitates. And what I also find, and I don't know if you find this as well, is that the healthier I get, the quicker my body responds when I give it something it doesn't like.
Interesting. And that
yes.
is true.
Yes. So, yes, I drink herbs all the time. I drink nettles for allergies. I take supplements to strengthen my heart. I use cayenne, coenzyme Q10. And interestingly enough, a few years ago, I go to a natural healer, and she's an herbalist, and she said that I had a congenital heart defect. And I was surprised by that because I never knew it, but I was so tired. I had no energy. And she says, oh, it's your heart. It's weak. And what I find with naturopathic healers is that they find problems before they're true issues. So I can go to a regular doctor, and they don't see anything. But if I go to a natural healer, quite often they will pick up the subtleties before it's actually manifested as disease. So she saw the weakness in the heart, and I was so tired, and she told me to take the coenzyme Q10 and to start the cayenne. And I went to the regular doctor just to check, with the EKG and so forth, and I indeed did have an enlarged left ventricle. And so I started her protocol with the vitamins and the cayenne. I went back 4 months later to get an echocardiogram. And the technician said, oh, I wish my heart looked as good as yours. It was back to normal. And so it was really a testimony for me that the herbs and the naturopathic way can really work for me.
Yes, and see, I'm a master herbalist as well as also licensed as a naturopath. So that's right up my tree right there. And some good other herbs in which that is good for the heart is hawthorn, berry, garlic, as well as also cayenne pepper, and those three together definitely would knock out almost any ailment dealing with the heart. So He was right on with cayenne pepper. The cayenne pepper is excellent. It helps with the circulatory system, the blood, as well as also digestive. And a lot of the problems come through the digestive system. So the cayenne pepper helps with the regulation, acts as a mild laxative in order to get the poisons and the toxins that is built up within the through small and large in order to be basically defecated out, you know, as well as also it helps with the cleansing of the kidneys, so even help with filtering the kidneys. As well as also helps with the removal of toxins and poisons from the liver and the bowel. So cayenne pepper is so excellent. I mean, that's what everyone needs to be taking, especially today with the amount of chemicals that we come in contact with. You know, cayenne pepper is definitely one of the all-time better herbs, along with golden seal. Golden seal is also an all-cure herb, except golden seal you can't take for long periods of time. You can take it for probably about 2 to 3 weeks and then stop for about a week and then have to, you know, get back on that regimen about 2 or 3 weeks again, you know.
Oh, okay.
But cayenne pepper you can take every day, you know, all day long, because it is something in which that helps with, you know, the improvement of your circulation. And that is definitely needed, especially with people who have diabetes, heart problems, high blood pressure, and, you know, those things are ravishing our community.
Yes, definitely.
Go ahead.
Well, the meditation, I think, is also a big one for me.
I was getting ready to ask you about it.
Were you? Yes.
Because
if I stop, I'm okay, but I don't seem to get, I guess, the intuition working the way I need it to. And when I am meditating, signs just come to me all the time. And it's interesting because I've had a little inflammation, not a lot, and I was in the supermarket today, and oddly enough, something fell off the shelf, and I hadn't touched anything. I thought this was very mystical. And I wanted to buy ginger. I'd been thinking about ginger. And something fell off the shelf. I turned around, and there was the ginger. I said, that is not coincidence. And those kinds of things happen when I'm meditating.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because the meditation helps with the balancing of the mind, body, and spirit. And soul aspect, it brings everything into union, the lower self and the higher self. So whenever we meditate, it's like, you know, we can give out, you know, prayers, you know, and hope God answers them, you know. But in order to hear if God did answer them, you must be in meditation. So it's like, you know, we can give out the call, which is prayer, but in order to receive the call back, you know, that's meditation. So that's why the Bible says, peace be still and know God, you know. That's how you know God, is through being still, through meditation, you know. So meditation is definitely what is needed, you know, in this day and time, you know.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And it's so, that's why my blog is staying grounded in a frantic world, too, because I think we move so much and we have so much going on all the time that we can't hear. You know, usually we're in, like, express. You know, I'm going here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So it's very rare that we're in receptive mode. By the time we stop, we're so tired that we just sort of pass out, I think, or we are so overstimulated that we're jittery and we're still not relaxed. And it's only meditation that gives me that sense of peace and receptivity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, same here. I have to do meditations and Reiki before I go to sleep and every morning before I get out of bed. It's just something I have to do in order to feel rejuvenated, you know, and to feel like, okay, I can start the day. Let's go get at the world. You know, do what we have to, you know, do what we have to do. So that's a requirement for any person who is striving towards unification or yoga as they refer to it, or what is actually, that's religion, you know, to tie or bind or link yourself back. What are you linking yourself back to? Is to your higher self, your God force within you. So we all need to be striving towards that path.
Yes, definitely. Well, we are certainly on the same page because I also practice Reiki. I have not gotten, you know, higher level. I got the first level of Reiki, I guess, in 1995 or something like that. But I was amazed that even with that low level of involvement, I can still, you know, bring healing to areas. I can feel the energy, you know, traveling through my body. So those of you who are really deep into Reiki, there's power there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a Reiki master teacher, so I can take you through Reiki 2 and 3 because, I mean, you just definitely have the vibes of a healer. So that's necessary for the people that you come in contact with in the Raleigh, North Carolina area so that you can, you know, spread your touch and the science of, you know, universal life force energy or Reiki or Chi or Ki, you know, energy, prana, you know, all of these things are within the Bible, Holy Spirit, because that's actually what it is. You know, it's the manifestation of what we refer to as the Holy Spirit, which is one's own nature, Kundalini, you know, which is force, universal, or the personification, that universal life force energy concentrated within each and every one of us. And as we're able to draw down energies and actually utilize, you know, the energies to be transmitted through our bodies, you know, through our hands. You know, I mean, it's no coincidence that there's 29 compartments in the brain dedicated to the hands alone. That's more than any other organ the brain has connection with, you know.
Wow.
29 compartments. So the hands are definitely what is utilized in order to transmit the most given life force energy. There's no doubt that, you know, your arms are actually an extension of your heart, you know, and that is shown through the hugs that we give. On a daily, and so forth and so on. So, you know, as it resonates at the heart, you know, it is transmitted through our arms and then out through our hands, you know. But it's only after it comes in contact with our own personification or our own life force energy, you know, that the command, in order to channel it, it is given out, you know. So Reiki is very powerful. And for people who don't have a clue, I suggest that you get one because when we speak about the Bible and when I'm laying on hands, that's actually what they're referring to. You know, the symbols, of course, in Reiki, the symbols in Reiki actually help fortify the energy and control the transference of bioplasmic energy because all of us have an auric field. This is basically shown through the Kirlian camera or photograph in which that there's light in which that is emitted from our bodies. And, you know, when there's a lot of debris, negative thought forms and different other things clogging up our auric field, disease, ailment, sickness, these things can be passed on. However, with the Reiki, can't be passed on because you use the symbols as the safeguard against the transference of your particular energies, whether it's from the healer to the healee or the healee to the healer. So it's not like in shamanism in which that, like we've seen on the Green Mile with John Coffey having to cast off the disease after he sucks it from the person or after he takes on the energy from the person. You know, that's the same thing within Qigong. Normally how that is done as within pranic healing is the same way. Reiki is the only one in which actually offers safeguards in that regard of transference of energy. It tones down on those, it tones down on that as compared to pranic healing, as compared to shamanism, as compared to Qigong or Tai Chi. So all of them have the same healing energy. You know, some takes longer in order to master Reiki. However, you can gain instantly or instantaneously, you know, through just transmission or what is referred to as an attunement. You know, the others takes sometimes years. Like Reiki, it's instantaneous, but Qigong, the same energy in order to build up to what a person of your status, like you said, Reiki 1, it actually would take them almost 2 years to build up.
I can see, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's so interesting, all the things you're saying, because it takes all of that, I think, in this these times in order to be healthy. You know, the eating, the natural healing, the healing yourself, all that. Without, it's almost like a job, do you find?
Yes, it is. It is. And actually, I love my job. I've been doing it for quite some time. And I started around the mid-90s, early mid-90s myself, doing the Arts of Healing. I came through the Sufi orders. I came into Qigong, Tai Chi, Reiki, Pranic Healing. Had masters such as Sunyata Saraswati, Prince Ramesses Ebobey, Mantai Chia, as well as also Chua Koksui, and many others. Have met and sat under them, you know, in some shape, form, or fashion. And these are, you know, masters that I can just say, look, I've actually, you know, met them and sat underneath them. As well as also Dr. York, you know, who also dealt with the science of healing, you know, wrote a book actually called The Science of Healing, in which that got me started actually in the late 80s with that science and on the pineal gland and third eye area and all that information and how to transmit healing energy through the eyes. So it was a lot of information, you know. And so people, listeners, please study, because there might be a time when there's no hospitals or you don't have access to hospitals, you know, or drugstores or so forth and so on, and the only gene that you have to depend on is the energy in which that you have access to, which is the sun or the solar flares, you know, or the cosmic energies, you know, in which that you can utilize and join, because those things come in through the north and south pole of the planet Earth. And you as a melanated being, you have the potential in order to absorb these energies, these frequencies, these modes, these schemes, these patterns, geometrical shapes, you know, that are coming in through your melanocytes and, you know, and capture these life force energies and store this energy to be transmitted later on, you know. So these are the keys, you know, and one of the things in which that rejuvenates us and revitalize and re-energize and regenerate us is actually the micro and the macrocosmic orbit. These are two techniques in which that I would tell the audience that they need to definitely study, because when you close off the circuits called the Huyin lock, and also referred to which is called the tongue and the root lock, those two particular locks in particular circulates the energy through the governing and the conceptual vessel up the back and down the front of the body, and they connect, and this causes a rejuvenation principle with each and every one of us. That is what causes us to become immortal or to live long periods of time. Longevity, as Martin Luther King says, has its place. So we need to find our place, you know, with these particular sciences. All right, but I don't want to take up too much time. I definitely want to go back to some of the things in which that you was dealing with. Let's get into some more healing aspects, because I know that's basically what we deal with. We deal with economics, we deal with healing, and I know the audience enjoy the science of healing. So anything else you have for us in regards to that?
Well, I think, and I always think in terms of, I guess this is the teacher in me, where do we start? Because there is so much information and so much wisdom that you are sharing. And for the beginners, because there are so many people who are, you know, just, we weren't taught to heal ourselves and we weren't taught to eat to live. We are in a society that has basically taught us the opposite of what we need most of the time. And I know many people who really do feel that because things are sold in the supermarket, then it's good food. So I think I always want to start with, where do we sort of begin our journey? because there was a time when I was eating everything just because I liked it, and I had to start somewhere. And I really did start, I think, with more natural foods. I didn't give up everything, but I started to eat only real food as opposed to things that were processed. Too much processed food is really has no nutrition. So I think that's a good place to start. Just a little bit of quiet time, even if you don't sit in meditation for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, just taking 5 or 10 minutes where you are just sitting in silence and getting in touch with the feeling of having nothing happen is, I think, a good place to start because we are so overstimulated. I have so many people I know that the first thing they do when they wake up in the morning is turn on the television, and it's on as long as they're in the house. And I think just getting some quiet time is healing because you have to be able to hear the small voice within yourself telling you what it needs, what it wants, what it what you're doing that's hurting it. I think that's a good place to start. So I think those are some simple self-healing things. And drinking water. I mean, we need so much water. I tell my students all the time we need, you know, our bodies, I think, are 70% water, and most days people drink maybe 8 ounces, 10 ounces, when we really should be drinking, you know, half our body weight in water, you know, just putting down those sodas and drinking water. And I'm sure that many people are doing these things already, but so many people aren't because I think our bodies are addicted. Even when we want to do them, they're calling us, you know, the sugar is calling us because we've been weaned on it, basically. Our parents didn't have that problem because it wasn't at every corner. It wasn't advertised all the time, so their bodies didn't have a craving for this. But so many people crave it. Even as we are conscious, it's still an effort. So I say take those small steps, and as we take those small steps, our systems get clearer and clearer. And as they get clearer, you crave more of what's true and what's real and what's pure. And so it is a journey. It's not an overnight thing. And also, I think being patient with ourselves, because it's also emotional. If we are so hard on ourselves, then we don't feel we deserve a better experience. So, you know, be patient and see the small steps and honor yourself for any little change you make, and it feeds your desire to do more. I think that is it. And, you know, we all fall sometimes, but it's very, very important to care enough about ourselves to jump back on and do what we know is the right thing to do, because we are human, but we are also, our bodies are just our vehicle. We are spirits, so our spirits can guide us if we get our bodies under wrap, you know. That the spirit should be leading, not our bodies. And the more we balance ourselves, I think we get into our natural position with that.
I agree. I remember looking up in Webster Dictionary years ago and wish that I looked up the definition of spirit and seen when it was synonymous with breath. And when I looked up breath and seen it was synonymous with spirit, it clicked. That, okay, in order to reach the spirit, you must learn how to breathe. So hence, you have to incorporate the science of breath. You know, and so breathing exercises, of course, we know, which is through meditation, relaxes you so that you can tap into the spirit or ancestral communications, you know, because your ancestors are all around you and they try to communicate to you. But if you're so bogged down, you know, by the nonsense of this world, by materialism, then you can't hear the voices, you know, and they can't protect you the way that they need to because you have not allowed yourself to, access for them to communicate with you. You close off the... You have become inaccessible to them. And so, you know, there's but so much they can do. So, I mean, this is the importance of meditation, the science of spirit, science of breath. All of these things are necessary, you know, so that, you know, we can, you know, be the greatest force here that we possibly can become. Because we're a concentration of all of our ancestors. You know, they often say 7 generations on our mother's side, 7 generations on our father's side. So we are a concentration of all of their memories, you know, to the point of when we was you know, when we was, quote unquote, conceived, you know, up to that point of where we conceived, our mother and fathers, all their experiences was basically put within us and their mother and father to the point of when they was conceived, and so on and so on for seven generations back, as far as the, you know, dominant force within us, you know, those concentrations of memories are within us. They call our DNA, you know, so, so we have to learn how to tap into our ancestral data bank, as Ashma Kwesi always speaks about. Otherwise, you know, we out in this world and we feel as if we're lonely and we'll, you know, we'll be led to depression and different other things because, you know, we would feel as if we don't have anyone to talk with or to help, you know, with the experiences in this life, and that's not true.
Right. But like you say, we have to hear it, and we cannot hear it without breathing and meditation.
No doubt about it. Well, we got some questions here, so we're going to go to the phone lines. Let's see. Area code 302, area code 302, you're on the line.
That's my bad. I ain't got no questions. I was trying to tell you about that reception.
All right, all right. We got area code 347, area code 347, you're on the line. 347? New York, New York, you're in the house. All right, we're going to go to area code 512. Area code 512, you're on the line.
Peace. What up, Elaine?
Peace. How you doing?
Doing good. I just wanted to ask a question about the, basically with the cayenne pepper, would that be in the spice form or the herb? Or maybe the tea?
It can be. Or whatever it is that you can brew in order to make into a tea, along with some of the other herbs. You don't have to have all of the herbs that I made mention of, but, you know, cayenne pepper along with golden seal works excellent, you know. And you can actually, you know, if you have a dropper, you know, you can actually use those particular herbs in the dropper and pour within the ear in order to clear up any problems in the area or anywhere actually on this skin.
Right, and because basically, like, he's going to the hospital because he has, like, cancer in his ear, and what they're going to do is an operation to rebuild his ear, but every time I try to give him some kind of information, you know, like this or herbs, they say, I don't know because they say they don't want to go against the doctor's orders.
Right, right. Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, you can suggest and you can recommend. You know, we can't say like doctors that, you know, that it can cure, you know, that is something always that can't be said. However, it's just common sense that when, you know, that even the scriptures tell you that God gave herbs, you know, in order to be the healing of the nation. You know, so
right.
We know that the herbs heal. So, and anyone who, you know, who have actually lived in the, you know, down south in the country area or, you know, on the islands or so forth and so on, they know the healing power of herbs. You know, so that's just something on which that if he chooses to, they're there. If not, I mean, if he, you know, utilizes allopathic medicine instead of naturopathic medicine, then that's his choice, you know. He can utilize it as a prevention, you know, once he gets his operation, you know.
Well,
so,
I mean, he just went through a colonoscopy, and they were doing that for a while, and they actually fucked some stuff up, you know, and where, you know, I don't know, they made an error, they messed something up in the system, and so, you know, but I'll definitely, you know, recommend. I can only recommend, but thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it. Yeah.
No, you're welcome. Peace.
Peace.
All right, we have another caller. Area code 314. Area code 314, you're on the line.
Peace and honor, Brother Dr. Darlene. Brother,
Brother,
how you
doing, Val?
Yes, sir. I was wondering, you saying about herbs. Could you take cayenne pepper with echinacea?
Yes.
Can, okay. Another thing, have you ever heard of homocysteine?
Yes.
That deals with the arteries leading to the heart and around the heart. And a lot of people are not aware of the homocysteine because the medical field doesn't even examine for you for homocysteines anymore. They haven't done that since the 1920s, what I've heard. And the reason why, because it'll solve a lot of problems with heart disease and cardiovascular problems.
Right, well, that's what, CoQ10 is for. Also, another good product is called Ashia, which
okay.
stabilizes sodium chlorine or chloride, in which that is stabilized, in which that helps also. There's many other herbs in which that will help, like we said, hawthorn berry, golden seal, chickweed, you know, so. These are the herbs, cayenne pepper, of course. Whatever is going on with the heart area, these are the herbs in which that can be utilized, as well as the vitamins and minerals that can be utilized in order to help with that particular problem. Magnesium phosphate is the homeopathic product for Leo, and the Leo astrologically rules the heart. So you would use... homeopathically, you would use magnesium phosphate.
Okay. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Because I was really, I was, like I tell a lot of people, even I did it myself, I asked my doctor, how about checking my homocysteine? And he looked real funny. He looked real funny at me, like I'm not supposed to know nothing about any of that, you know.
Right.
And they came back to me and said, they don't do that anymore. And you can never give me any reason why they don't do it anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, they have to check the blood and check certain components within the blood. So you're talking about really extra money in which that they probably would think that you don't have. Or if you have insurance, are you sure you want this done, type of thing? You know, we're still talking about the medical industry, which is pure profit and, you know, pure business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the best thing is to go get you $5 worth of herbs and do the same thing, you know, and just simply heal yourself instead of depending upon, you know, like for example, I don't know if you was listening earlier on, but Sister Angela was talking about how a naturopath told her about her heart, and she went to go get it verified.
Yes, I heard that.
And she went to go get it verified through the doctor, you know what I'm saying, you know, which that, you know, she did find out that it was, but that was through the verification. The doctor, so you can use the doctors in order to verify, you know, but I would still remedy, you know, I would still do my own remedies.
Right.
You know, and she said she started taking cayenne pepper.
Okay.
And she went 4 months later, nothing was wrong.
Okay.
So, you know, so you can use them to make determinations, but to remedy, you know, to put forth a remedy, I would use something natural, you know. I mean, we are still somewhat natural, even now, even with all the genetically altered food, we are somewhat still natural. So, you know, natural would still be the best thing. I know we have a lot of artificial foods, you know,
right.
A lot of chemical processed foods, steroids, antibiotics within the food, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, you know, MGS, what is it? MSG.
Monosodium glutamate.
So we have a lot of, you know, artificial yellow number 5 and 40 and green, no 5 and blue 6.
Kind of junk.
Right, so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's in the food, you know, but we're still somewhat natural, you know, even though for the artificiality, you know, it would still be best to take natural things. We haven't become AI yet, artificially intelligent, you know, but that's what they move towards.
What do you think
yeah.
about shark liver oil? Shark liver oil?
Well, that's just dealing with the vitamin D aspect. If you go out into the sun, I mean, you as a melanated being, vitamin D happens naturally as soon as you get into the sun. Within less than 2 minutes, it's already being manufactured on your skin. And then it's being reabsorbed your skin back into your bloodstream in order to become vitamin D in order to help with the both calcium.
Okay.
Which is for your bones, your teeth, you know, your cartilage.
Okay.
So, you know, that is a substitute, but there's nothing that's a greater, you know, primary force than the sun itself, which is the giver of light and life.
Okay, brother. Okay.
In other words, everything that we talk about is secondary, but the primary force on this planet is the sun itself and the sun within the earth itself. So the sun's, you know, are the primary force of life upon this planet. And we being a living example of the earth, it's called Earthland. You know, the sun has the greatest effect upon us as well as also is artificial satellite, or as it satellite, as it says, the moon. As we know, the moon correlates with its phases. It's 4 different phases, you know, throughout the 7 days or 28 days, just like the woman's menstruation. Happens every 28 days. So the moon deals with the pulling tide and the water element within the body. It deals with the within the males with the wet dreams, as well as also within the woman with the menses.
Okay.
You know, the sun helps with the chlorophyll, which is called melanin within us. There's, like we said before, there's the only difference between chlorophyll and melanin is one magnesium molecule. Otherwise, the structures are identical.
Wow.
Chlorophyll and melanin are identical except for one magnesium molecule. And scientists will tell you that the only reason why, and then at one time that magnesium molecule was activated within us, but somehow it became dormant. And iron took over. So now we become iron-based instead of magnesium-based. But the reason why is because iron is a better conductor than magnesium. So at one time we were, and we did have a greenish tint to us, just like plants. We had chlorophyll.
That's what we call olive shade.
Right, we had olive shade.
Asiatic, okay.
Right, however, with iron becoming the primary molecule, you know, we started to rust and turn brown.
Okay. Okay. What do you think is better, to use cayenne pepper with Etchinus seal or golden seal?
Golden seal. Cayenne pepper and golden seal combined is so powerful. I mean, it knocks out almost every element, and this ease almost that could possibly be there, or you think is there, or is there.
Okay, because I heard you said 3 weeks is a limit for using golden seal. So how many weeks should I wait before I start again?
No, only a week. You can start back after a week.
Okay.
In other words, you just don't want your body to become too used to golden seal.
Okay.
So you want to give it a week in order to get back, you know, do its bodily functions, and then you can start it back again the following week. You know, so 1 week, you know, so 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks on, 1 week off, 2-3 weeks on, 1 week off. It would be like that.
Wow, okay.
As long as you give your body a break, it can't do damage to your liver. if you was taking it excessively for months and months and months every day, then it can do damage to your liver. But when you do the breaks, then your body have the ability in order to eliminate what it don't need.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that. I sure did.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Angela, you wanted to say something on that topic? Yes.
Well, just I had a little testimony about the golden seal myself. Years ago, my cousin had a pink eye. He had, was traveling, had pink eye, and I looked in one of my books, and it said to put golden seal, I can't remember the third ingredient, and vitamin C. I made a little paste and diluted it, and the next morning it was gone. Whole thing
right.
gone.
Was it eye bright?
No, it wasn't eye bright because I didn't have that, but I had all three ingredients in the house. I can't remember that third one.
Wow.
And it was the next day it was gone. He could wear contact lenses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we know that for the eyes, golden seal, yellow dock, bilberry, eye bright, those are excellent herbs when liquefied into a tea can definitely be put into the eyes in order to heal the eyes of irritation, redness, pink eye, cataracts, glaucoma. You know, so I know everybody right now just think weed is the only thing that can get rid of glaucomas or help with that. It's not, you know, so, you know, because all the movies, that's what they keep showing you. I got glaucoma, that's why I'm smoking it. You know, but there's more herbs that can be utilized for those types of things dealing with the eyes. And we've gone over some of this information before for those who are regular listeners. You know, for brain issues, ginkgo biloba, guaiacola, ginseng, or known as the triple G's, you know, which that helps with brain functions, right?
Okay.
The eye, already done. Of course, the throat, we could use cayenne pepper, mullein for the upper respiratory system in order to remove mucus, as well as also from the throat and nasal passages, it would be cayenne pepper and mullein. That's M-U-L-L-E-I-N.
Mullein. Write that down.
For the lungs, same thing. So for the nasal passage, the throat and the lungs, cayenne pepper and mullein. For the liver, milk thistle, dandelion, you know, to cleanse the liver.
Okay.
As well as also the kidneys. All right. For the stomach, small, large intestines would be cassegara, fenugreek, aloe ferox, you know, all the real good herbs. You know, for the genital area, herbs for the women would be Don Quai, Damiana, you know, red raspberry. For the males would be Supplemento, Picium, Damiana, horny goatweed, sarsaparilla.
The sarsaparilla. The sarsaparilla. The sarsaparilla. I take sarsaparilla. But I remember you saying in one lecture you was given that it you had to take so much of it.
Right. Well. There's extracts in which they can utilize. It seems to me that liquid works better than the powder form.
Okay.
So if you make it into a tea, you can actually take the powder form, about half of a teaspoon or a teaspoon or so, put it in a coffee maker machine, within a filter and brew it, and drink two or three cups, a day. You know, seems to help quicker because it's liquefied. You know, you can also make it into a concentration, into a droplet, and put do the concentration. If you add, now there's a way in order to make it in which you can actually add alcohol. You can actually use vodka or gin. based on proof, along with the particular herb and which that you would let it concentrate over a few days or so. You can also use that and actually put it within the dropper and drop it and actually put it underneath your tongue.
Yes, sir.
Go directly into your bloodstream.
It has a certain effect on me, though, the soft and metal. I'll probably talk to you about that in private when I...
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
not bad, but it's...
Right.
I didn't think it would have that effect, though.
Okay.
I really didn't. But it would kind of... I don't know, I might as well say it. Sometimes it gets me aroused, sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know
why. Well, I mean, that's natural because you're healing that area. And when that area is healed, I mean, that's just the natural function of that particular nature. You know,
okay.
It's arousal. I mean, actually, the more aroused you are shows the more healthy you are.
Okay.
The less arousal, you might want to question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
all about
circulation,
isn't it? Good circulation.
Bingo.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because
I was kind of a little bit, wondering because I have a sister on the line. So I said, well, we may still talk about that.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm a grown-up. It's all right.
Okay. Because I said, well, no, it's not a stimulant. So why is it making me doing that,
Yeah, all circulation. What?
So, the soft and metal. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. So, I know that the honey gold weed does it, but when I take the soft and metal, I said it does it too, and I'm like,
So that's Yohimbe.
Okay.
Yeah, maca. Yeah.
Okay.
All of them do it, and that's
okay.
Because that's the natural function of a healthy. From lower nature.
Okay.
And remember, that's where your life force is concentrated at. It's in your genitals.
Okay.
My teacher, Sanyana, says, well, he said, that's your soul.
That's one of the chakras. Isn't it?
Right, that's one of the seven Elohim.
Okay.
Or the seven, that's the root chakra. You know,
okay.
what do you think when they talk about Jesus being the root of David? What's the root of David? If David within Hebrew means beloved, and Jesus is the root of David, what do you think they was talking about?
Well, you got me there. Yeah, okay.
I'm just saying, they talk about your lower nature. They talk about your genitals and that life force energy in which that permeates from that particular location or area. Anyone knows that that's the quickest and the most powerful area in the body that gets stimulated. There's no other area in the body in which that get and receive more stimulation than that area. That's the reason why it's so important within the raising of children also to be taught the proper science of sex, so that they won't deplete that area because that is their life force. And if they want to live long periods of time, then they will have to utilize that energy in order to rejuvenate themselves on a daily basis.
Okay.
So, you can't stop a teenager from masturbating. Well, you can teach them, though, how to raise that energy up through those seven chakras in order to rejuvenate themselves.
Okay.
Something which that our parents definitely didn't teach us. The reason why, because they didn't know. So they never was taught Tantra Kriya Yoga or any of the of these particular sciences because all this information was hidden.
Okay.
In Tibet. In the yogi traditions, in the Orient, with the Japanese and the Chinese, and it was only passed through the family line or through students, teachers and student relationship. It was never, available to us as it is now.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't teach them how to maintain that energy.
Contain
that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Not
right.
Waste seed,
Right, exactly. That was the science of the story of Odin within the Bible. It says that God killed Odin for the spilling of his seed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was showing you how precious the seed or the life force is within you, and then when you waste it, you know, you kill yourself. That's what it's meant by God killed Odin. It wasn't like God just struck Odin down and said, oh, look at you.
Wow.
No, it was somebody that you killed yourself. You know, you destroyed. Remember, when you read the Bible and it says about, do ye not know that your body is the temple of God, you know, and that, and if you do not know that your body is the temple of God, then if you try to destroy your temple, then God would destroy you. You know, so that's what it says. You know, and so that is a clear explanation of what happened with Odin. When you waste your life force, you deplete yourself, so therefore you die. I mean, and it's no coincidence. I mean, we're looking at Francis Bacon or Shakespeare within, I think it was in Hamlet, where he made the statement that he died 1,000 times within the lap of this woman. You know, he was talking about that he spilled his seed 1,000 times. And each time he spilled his seed, he died.
And that killed him.
Right. He knew that that was deep, was basically deleting his life force. You know, so we have to look at these things. This is all scriptural, but there are things and keys within the scriptures on which that do and are relevant to us even today, and that we can utilize. All of them isn't just the story of, you know, Moses splitting the Red Sea and then having to think on how they relate to you here and now in this day and time.
Cano was one basketball player, or was it basketball player, said he been with 700 women or something, you know. And I'm like,
oh, yeah. Right. You're talking about Solomon. Yeah, Solomon had 700 concubines and 300 wives.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
700 women. That's how he's still living, you know.
Yeah, right. But you got to understand is that was something dealing with science, because 700 and 300 is 1,000. At the top of your head, you have the 1,000 lotus petals when you become enlightened. Mm-hmm. And Solomon was known as the wisest man.
Hmm.
So that's
wow.
Actually what the woman was symbolic to. The woman was the kundalini energy. That's why he refers to her within Proverbs as a her. When you see wisdom, it's referred to as a her. She.
Hmm.
That's the kundalini.
Hmm.
And as the kundalini moves up the spinal column, the last place it is the top of the head, in which that unfolds the 1,000 petals of light. So hence the 1,000 women of Solomon. You don't have nothing to do with, you know, actual women in that regard. It's about the power within you. Just like you have 1,000 horsepower. That's what it's talking about, 1,000 horsepower. It's about the kundalini.
Okay. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
See, these are old stories, but you have to study metaphysics and esoteric teachings in order to grasp what is actually being said. This is why it's hidden. This is why within Freemasonry, within the Rosicrucians, the Golden Dawn, the OTO, all these different other sects and, you know, secret societies, this is what is hidden within those particular schools of thoughts. And they know that the masses won't be ready for it, you know, but who are they in order to determine who's ready for it or not?
Right.
This is why I teach what I teach, because I can't say who is or not. I just give it and let chips go where they may. And then I see 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, people are still studying. They come to me and say, yo, you know, I seen that tape that you had years ago. And, man, you know, I grew from that. So you don't know who does what, and you don't have the right to determine who can get what information.
Right, and this is a new age. I mean, you can just see that. I feel like our survival is hinged on knowing the things that have been kept from us, because it, you know, they're always talking about the end of the world. But I think it's the end of the world as we know it. But because we've
right.
gotten so far away from, you know, what truly is life and what truly is pure, and so we need this information in order to, you know, just change the way we live.
I agree. When they talk about the Aquarian Age,
mm-hmm.
yeah, the Pisces Age, the Pisces, now we're in the Aquarian Age. You know, now
well,
that's what I'm talking
about. You're right. This is even taught within the yoga traditions. It says that we have left the age of Kali Yuga, and now we have entered the age of Sata Yuga.
Okay.
Now, this is taught now within the teachings of the yogi traditions. So the Yokis are correlating this same signs of their calendar and time periods to the Mayan calendar, or the Olmec Mayan calendar time periods, as well as also to the so-called New Age calendar of the alignment of this galactical alignment. All of this is correlating at this same time period right now as we speak, you know, of these particular, I mean, look in the 70s when we was talking about the fifth dimension, you know,
right.
And they were saying the age of Aquarius.
Right, I remember that.
Why did they call themselves fifth dimension? Because they knew that's where we were headed, was into the fifth world, according to the Hopi, to the Hopi's prophecies, and also to the Aboriginal and the African prophecies. They all speak about this fifth world. So what is this fifth world? This fifth world is the fifth dimension. And so we are fourth dimensional beings being held down by predominantly third dimensional beings who don't want us to make the graduation into the fifth world or into this new heaven and the new earth. But it's a little bit too late right now, because this radio show and many others, as well as many lecturers and speakers and teachers, are demonstrating that, you know, it's too late. This information is out and people are growing, and we will reach that level of consciousness. And the fifth dimension is just merely utilizing energy. The third dimension is based on length, width, and height. The fourth dimension is based on depth, which is based on time and space. And the fifth dimension is based on energy.
So the fifth dimension knew the science all the time, didn't they?
Right, right. This is why the show that we've been building with on here tonight is dealing with energy. We talked about prana, chi, ki, Holy Spirit, kundalini, everything. We talk about energy. And this is where this is moving towards, because we know that that's what we are. Scientists, quantum physicists have determined that your physical body is composed of star dust energy. If you are a star, if you are a walking star, you know, a walking light, you know, that's what you are. You emit heat, you emit light, you emit radiation. This has all been proven. This is 101. You know, energy can't be transformed, just simply contained. You know, it can be transformed and contained, you know, but energy can't be destroyed.
That's what somebody told me about the Halloween 1, 2, and 3. That was Michael Myers. It was dealing with the energy, why they couldn't kill him.
Right.
But that was some brother told me about that. He said that there was the pumpkin was the symbolic of at the top when they cut off the top. That was symbolic of letting the energy out. And I forgot all what he told me, but it was been so long ago. But I didn't really at that time. I wasn't conscious of a lot of things, so I kind of let it go.
Right. Right.
Now I wish I could have listened to them more.
There's so much to know.
It is.
I have really enjoyed being on your show. Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you being on here. And please give out your website before you go.
Okay. It's www.thewritingclinic.com. TheWritingClinic.com, and that has information about my books and my blog, which is AngelaBelcherEpps.blogspot.com, and hopefully we will all be in touch in the community, because it's all about sharing information. And I've learned so much from you tonight about energy. And
I have too.
Yes. It confirms what I need to know about just continuing on the path.
Oh, that's excellent, because, I mean, that's what we've been doing here for a long time. So, you know, that's what we do. We share energy, you know, we share energy, you know, information, knowledge, you know. To me, that is energy. So, you know, everybody can grow from it, you know, it's positive energy. I know I've experimented in which that was done by Masaru Emoto, Japanese scientist, in which that they spoke positive things into a glass of water. Froze the glass of water and looked at it on a microscope, and it was a 6-point star configuration, like flakes. Then they took another glass of water and spoke negative things into it, and froze it, and then looked at it under a microscope, and it looked discombobulated. no structure whatsoever. The molecules didn't have any structure. It just looked dark and just, you know, no form. So we are 75% water. Our brain is 90% water. Spinal column is 80% water. You know, our blood is 90% water, you know. And we're an aquatic being. What does this say about when you speak positive things, do prayers, affirmations, decrees, you know, for yourself? You know, what
right.
does this say? You know, when we have to hear negative things, you know, what does it do? You know, so,
right.
you know, it's, you know, so we know that these are sciences, you know, and these are things in which that is needed for health, you know, and wellness. But we appreciate you all for being on. Thank you, Sister Angela. And
thank
we
you.
Definitely will have you on again.
I would
you know,
love to come again.
All right. Appreciate you. And Brother L, appreciate you coming on and asking them questions. All right. And we're going to see you all. All right. And we're going to see you all next week. Peace
I'm
and love.
I look forward to it.
Peace and love.
Peace and love. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Peace and love.
turning it out without a doubt. Know what I'm talking about. Just scream and shout and everybody say. Now Detroit, what the fuck the beat? Getting wild in the street. See them off at the beat. Take the police.
What up, man?
Shot-town, what the funk is down. So by the pound. Just get on down. What the fuck is the ball? The ball. You see? West Coast, side with the most. Holding your toes. Brag the boats. What the is the wall? What the hole? Everybody hurt. Dirty, you know, dirty, 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 dirty,
come on,
dirty,
come on,
shine, 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 shine.